Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Filipina Journey podcast. And I have here the host of Lagim, Christine Abrigana. She's a Filipino German host. And yun nga, she's the creator of Lagim, a Filipino true crime podcast. Hello.
Hi there.
Welcome. I'm so happy that you are here with me. I super duper love your podcast. And can you tell me more about yourself and how you started your podcast?
Of course. So, right. So I was born in Germany, actually. My mom's Filipina from Davao, and my father is the German part. And they met up. They were pen pals, and it was a very short sort of panliligaw, sort of their version of it, I guess. It was just a bit of a weird situation, pen pals, and then, you know, my mom being from the Philippines, never having been outside. And then a year later, I was born. But I, even though I was born in Germany, I spent most of my life in Davao, where my mom is from. So I grew up in Davao City. And since then, I've been sort of all over the place. My background actually is in law. So I went to law school. I studied law. I practiced a little bit. My specialty was family law. But I've always had the heart of a criminal lawyer. It's just that, and I think that's where the true crime interest really, really started. The theory of criminal law was something that I always excelled in. I always had very good marks in law school when it came to criminal law. But since there's not a lot of like money in criminal law when you're practicing law, I ultimately did not go into it. So I practiced family law, but deep inside I'm like, so interesting to practice. It would have been interesting to practice criminal law. But I also had to think of, you know, you have to earn some money. So yeah, I practiced only for a short while, really, because in the end, I realized it's something that I was not really happy doing. I enjoyed more the study of law and the research of law rather than the practice of it, because those two things can be very different. And I think ultimately, that is what led me to true crime podcasting, because a big part of it is reading, researching, sort of trying to structure your research so you know what happened before the crime, and what happened after the crime. So a lot of it is like putting together a timeline, making sure that the way that I write the script will be understandable for, you know, to those who are listening. And I think that, you know, my legal background helped a lot with that. And ultimately that led me to deciding one day, you know what, I can't find a lot of Filipino true crime podcasts. And I've been listening to this Western focused podcast for years, and it's always the same. You've got like, yes, you know, you talk about Jack the Ripper, you talk about Ted Bundy, you talk about Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, it's like it's the same old cases all the time. It's always cases from the US, and I realize, you know, the US is big, and you know, of course they would have a higher number of criminals out there, but it's the same thing. Like if you look at true crime podcasts, if it's not US, it's Canada, it's Australia, it's the UK, it's mostly white countries, Western countries, right? And so I thought, you know what, we have our stories too, and we deserve to be our stories deserve to be heard. Our true crime stories always have a very uniquely Filipino cultural aspect to it, and people might not know you know, Filipino dynamics in our society. So it's good to maybe tell them about our true crime stories so that they understand, you know, this crime ultimately was possible, or was or there was no other way for this crime to conclude the way that it concluded, because our culture is like this, Filipinos are like that. And so I thought, you know what, if I cannot find a podcast that I'd love to listen to, the kind of stories I'd like to listen to, then let me make one. So then I ended up doing my own. When the pandemic started, I think it really gave me a push to ultimately go for it. I was still working as a lawyer when I was researching episode one, and I realized that it's a lot of work, and it took me ages to launch. And then in the middle of the pandemic, I quit my law job, and I had a bit more time to focus on, you know, doing the research, doing the podcast, launching it. And then that's how it started, really, because I just wanted to tell stories. I just wanted to have a podcast out there for listeners who love sort of a deep dive into cases. A lot of true crime podcasts give you, not just the Filipino ones, but a lot of true crime podcasts in general in the genre, they don't give you a deep dive. Usually it's just 20 minutes or 30 minutes of just like a general overview. And me as a listener, I like deep dives. So I thought, you know, since I like deep dives, and maybe that's what I should be doing in my podcast. And that's why you can see my podcasts are never really short. So on average, they're like 40, 50, 60 minutes, maybe longer. And only my bonus episodes are, you know, like 30 minutes or less, because I want to give the listeners a deep dive, as many details as possible, to keep them interested, to also give them a really full picture of the crime, the topic, the episode, the people, and you know, in the story, but also something like a jump board. So if they do their Google research themselves, and I know people, while they're listening, sometimes they Google and they go down a weird rabbit hole. I want them to have as many details as possible to make up their own minds, to make up their own opinions about a certain case. So yeah, that's the very long story of it.
Wow. I love it. And yeah, I agree to you. You know, I just saw Lagim on my Explore. I really didn't know about it. No one told me about it. I just saw it on my Explore tab on Spotify. And I myself, I'm super duper interested when it comes to true crime. I do listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. I do listen to solved mysteries, solved crimes. I listen to My Favorite Murder and all that. And I also researched a lot of podcasts that I didn't really like, because they explain it so hard that it makes me super annoyed, because I don't understand it very well. Parang sobrang kalat niya. And then when I heard Lagim, when I saw Lagim, it made me really interested. I remember pa it was during night. We were in the car and then I saw that. And that night, my family and I already listened to 5 episodes of yours. Because first of all, it's Filipino true crime, because that's the first true crime podcast na I heard that is here in the Philippines. You're right that most of the true crime podcast is Western, from the US, from Europe. And it made me more interested when I knew it was Philippines, and you explained it so well. It's like well researched. And yeah, that's why it takes like more than 30 minutes for the episode to run. It's because you can really see that you really researched very well on your cases. And yeah, I heard on like one of your episodes that yeah, you studied law. And you know, I'm that person who's really interested to crime. It's because I also want to be a lawyer, but then I want to be a corporate lawyer. Like, I've been thinking about criminal law also, but then it's kind of dangerous. Like, there may be, like, death threats here and there. But then, yeah, I same as you, I'm interested in corporate law. But when I listen to true crime, I love it. Like, I always tell my friends, I hate horror movies. But when I watch true crime documentaries, I can watch it in the evening. Like, that's how much I love true crime. And I really love your story. And I'm super happy that you started Lagim, because I just love how you explain things. It's just really well thought. And yeah, when I heard your episodes, you know, you have mga Pepsi Paloma, and those stories, I just hear it from my mom before. Like, I didn't really know anything about it. I just knew that this girl, Pepsi Paloma, blah, 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 blah. But then when I listened to your episode about that, like, oh my gosh, this is what she went through pala. Like, it's amazing, like, how you just said things. It just widened my perspective and my knowledge on different crimes here in the Philippines.
Thank you.
Yeah, and can I just ask you, like, since, yes, you did spend a lot of time here in the Philippines, but you were born in German, how was your transition, since you're half Filipino, half German? How was your transition in learning about Filipino true crime? Was it hard for you since you were not born here? And how was the process for you?
The good thing is, when I was in the Philippines, I was only like 5 or 6 years old, and then I left when I was a teenager. And during that time, I was there in the early 90s, all throughout the 90s, and, you know, the start of the 2000s. And the 90s were a bit weird anyway for everybody, but 90s Philippines was just bizarre, because there was such a spike in crime and true crime coverage that it was weirdly a normal part of our day to hear about rapes and murders and massacres on TV Patrol, like at 6 o'clock. Like, it's just something normal. Like, it was just part of our day. So I grew up with that. Like, my subconscious was very much primed for sort of the gory details. And back then, and even now, Filipino news reports, they don't necessarily censor sort of gory pictures, for example, of dead bodies. And that was even worse back in the 90s. So me being like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, watching TV Patrol, Noli de Castro, I would remember, reporting about, the Lipa massacre, reporting about, the ozone discos tragedy, and showing all the burned bodies, for example, without blurring it, you know. It was just so in your face when I was a child that stuck with me. And that's when I started being interested in true crime as well, without knowing that it was true crime, without knowing that it was now a growing interest inside me. And that was also the time when stories like the Flor Contemplacion execution happened. And I remember being in grade school in Davao, and we were all basically given some time off, and we just sat there with bated breath, sort of a few minutes before her execution. And I think somebody had their TV on as well. There was a live coverage somewhere in ABS, and we were all just sitting there and waiting for some sort of sign that, oh, now she's died. So imagine that. Like, that would never happen now. Like, that's completely traumatic for a child to be like, oh yeah, somebody's gonna be hanged, or somebody's gonna get, you know, the electric chair, somebody's gonna get the lethal injection, and we're all gonna have a few minutes off from our school day just to just to wait for it with bated breath and be told she's now dead. You know, how weird is that? And so that was all sort of integrated into her subconscious. And I think with me, that stuck. And when I eventually, you know, became older, I know that I was still interested in stuff like that, but not really actively, because kapag teenager ka, your interests are mostly boys and, you know, how to be pretty and all that. So it took a bit of a backseat. But when I went to Germany, that's when it kind of, I had my renaissance of true crime interest, mainly because I had access to cable TV. I had access to a lot of channels from the US. So then I started watching a lot of CSI, NCIS, Law and Order, you know, the typical stuff. And like I said, mostly white, mostly Western stories, something that, you know, I was like, but would this happen in the Philippines? You know, that was always my question. Like, and then, you know, when I would hear like very, very gory stories about what happened in America, I'm like, yeah, but we have something similar that happened in the Philippines, but ours was like the worst, you know. And I would always compare it to stories that I've grown up with. So when I finally did the podcast, it was so easy to just start it. It was not, there were no transition problems. There were no sort of growing pains, because it's something that I've always grown up with. Like the interest has always started in the Philippines, nowhere else. And so it was easy. It was just like going back to my childhood, remembering how it felt like to be listening to those awful, awful stories, and asking myself, you know, what kind of people would do this? What's behind the person? What's behind the criminal? What's behind the perpetrator? And so it was, there were no difficulties. It was just like a throwback to my childhood, really.
Yeah, and you mentioned, yeah, you had experiences also in your class when you were in Davao, but yeah, you also do a lot of research. May I know, like, the struggles and challenges you encountered along your way? Of course, it's hard to research. It really is, especially when it's true crime, especially when it's the Philippines. How was it for you, and how did you cope up with these challenges and struggles along the way?
I love researching, I love reading. So, you know, that's the first hurdle sort of already, you know, being put out of the way. But what I do find really difficult is sort of on the technical side, I find the amount of resources for older cases are very low. So it's, you know, the resources are scarce the older the case is. So when you go back to the 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, like the older the case, the less research material is out there. And that was the first challenge. The second challenge is I love going back to court documents, because with court documents, you have sort of the facts of the crime, the opinion of judges, the defense of the criminal, and also sort of the theory of the case by the prosecution. So you have all of these things that could really make for a good backbone to your research. But these are not readily available online. And I don't know if, you know, like in the UK, court case documents are kept on private databases that only sort of law students and legal professionals have access to. There are only a few Supreme Court documents that are available online, public domain, you don't have to pay for it. And not all cases would have them. And it's very frustrating that not all cases would have them, because I like to use court documents, but it's not always possible. So in the end, I would use news articles, news reports, blogs, even other podcasts or YouTube videos, because, you know, you have to use what's out there. You have to utilize what is out there. So that's the second challenge. The third challenge is the content of the research. I usually don't get that bothered about, you know, the usual things that I would research about: murder, massacres, and all that. But I get really bothered when it comes to violent deaths or violent murders of women, and also anything that is connected to children. I find it very, very hard to research those in one go. So I usually end up dividing my time doing a couple of hours of research per day, because if I just sit there for 6 hours straight, I feel very exhausted, and I know it would have an emotional impact on me. So as an example, when I was researching the Peter Scully case, which is Naguim's season one finale episode, I remember I've researched that case since Naguim started. So it's been there for like 5 or 6 months in my computer, but I could not do more than 30 minutes a day of research on it, because the details are harrowing. You know, and I didn't even put all the gory details in there, because I find it's very capricious to be doing so. But I still had to do the research and all the readings, right? But I found it really difficult. I found myself, you know, very angry at Peter Scully, very angry at the system, very angry at the families of the girls, you know, especially the parents who would essentially sell their own children into such horrible situations. I found myself very, very emotionally invested that I had to stop and then find another day to do it. So those are the things that really bother me. But I thought that maybe I should practice distancing myself emotionally from the things that I research. But then if I do that, it would affect my content, and I don't want that to happen. I'm an emotional person. I have my opinions. I have my leanings, you know, politically. And so I don't want to deprive my listeners of that. I always tell them, make up your own mind. I always tell them, you know, do your own research. That's why I give them a list of my resources so they can do their own research. But I don't want them to think that I am not affected by this, that I don't have my opinions about this. And that's why I will never not be emotional. And so that is just a job hazard, I suppose, that I will get affected. But what I did learn is to give myself space to recover when I feel like I'm drained from my research, and that's the best that I can do.
Yeah, wow. And you mentioned the Peter Scully one. I listened to that episode and my reaction was just like, what? Like, this is so wild. This is so dramatic also for a lot. And I don't know how you felt with that. That must have been very hard for you to do a lot of research with that. And that's why it's Naguim. You know, when I don't know the word Naguim until I asked my mom. I asked my mom, Mom, what is Naguim? And she told me it was parang scary, dark. Mm-hmm. And those are the words that she said. But coming from you, why Naguim and the meaning behind Naguim? Why did you use the word Naguim? Such a complex word, such a infamous word. Mm. Why Naguim?
I guess I wanted to have a descriptor for, not necessarily for the podcast, but sort of that would reflect my feeling when I listen to podcast stories. Because your first reaction always is, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. Oh my God, that is always so horrible. But really, if you really dissect your emotions and your reactions, there is an underlining of dread and terror within you when you listen to these stories, because as human beings, you always reflect it back on yourself and you think, what if this happens to me? What did this person do that they ended up in the situation they were in, and now they're dead, or now they're hurt, or now they're sexually assaulted, right? And so it's also a very a very woman thing to do, to question these things, because we know that, you know, we know that, for example, in a lot of countries, crime statistics would tell you that, you know, there are some crimes where women are largely the victim over men, for example. And so as women, we listen to true crime podcasts sometimes as an instruction manual. You know, what happened to this person that they ended up in that situation, and how can I avoid that? You know, sometimes that's the reason why we listen to it. And that's because there's an underlying, a subconscious, not really subconscious, but part of our wanting to learn how to avoid being in those situations, part of our oh my God moments when we listen to the podcast is always this dread, you know, always the desire to avoid that, to not be the victim in those podcast stories. And that is how I thought, what could describe this emotion, this sort of very subtle, you know, nagging voice or feeling in your heart, in your head, that tells you it could happen to you. By the way, you better listen to this, because it could happen to you, because we're all humans. We can all die any minute now, you know, life is short and all that. But you know, this dreadful feeling that you could be one of these victims that podcasters will be talking about. And that was the best word that I could come up with, lagim, because it's a noun which essentially means dread or terror or something dark, something very insidious, you know, not really in your face, but it's more of like, you know, that undercurrent of fear that makes you think twice about whether you're going down that escalita or not, whether you are going to answer the text of this maniligo or not, because it's giving you, you know, bad vibes, whether you are going to this party or not, because you don't like the people. It's that weird sort of gut instinct feeling, you know, that might just save you, you know. And that is how I thought would best describe the kind of stories that I want to tell, and lagim was the best word for it. I think it was a good choice in the end. I would not have it any other way.
Yeah, I just keep nodding my head because I totally relate to everything you said. Yeah, and if you're a girl, talaga, it's really different. You can't just walk at night on the road. It's really dangerous, especially if you're here in the Philippines. And yeah, every time I listen to your episodes, I do get that feeling na, oh my gosh, what if this was me? What if this will happen to me? This can happen to me anytime. This can happen to me anywhere. And it really is scary. And those words, dread and terror, that's the best explanation for it. And can I just ask you, like, do you see yourself still doing this, siguro in the next 3 years? Or what is the goal of your podcast?
I'd like to keep producing episodes for as long as, you know, the universe would let me produce episodes. I don't want to stop. I have a list of episodes, at least for the next year or two. There are a lot of cases, there are a lot of stories that I want to tell. I'd like to be able to do this full time so I can produce more episodes, or at least, you know, maybe do some other stuff on the side as well. So I'd like this to be my full-time job at some point. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, if it's actually possible. But I see myself doing this for as long as I could, for as long as, you know, the Lord will allow me. Because I truly enjoy it. I enjoy the community that, you know, that I've been able to build around the podcast. I have wonderful listeners who are very supportive, who are, you know, always hyping me up, who always give me good feedback. I meet people online who are related to the people that I talk about. And I don't talk about this a lot, on Instagram and on my stories and even on my personal account, because I'd like to respect the privacy of those people. But I've been in touch with, you know, I would talk about, I'm not going to say who, but I talk about these murder victims, and there were some family members who've been in touch with me, either the mother or the sister or the brother, or, you know, a cousin, and they've been in touch with me. And it's always good to hear sort of their feedback. It's always good to hear about, you know, what they thought will happen to the case if, you know, the case is still ongoing. And really, it's something that I want to keep doing, and I don't want to stop. And, you know, if I run out of stories, and I'm sure I'll find another way to highlight Filipino stories again. I'm sure that will happen. But in 3 years and even 5 years, if I'm allowed to, I'd really love to continue doing this, and maybe expand on this passion project.
Yeah, definitely. And I am looking forward to all those episodes, guys. Listen to the game. I really do learn a lot, and it's very interesting. It's something you all should start doing. Listen to True Crime Podcast, because especially the game, because this is what's happening. This is what happened in the society in our country. And yeah, I learned so much from you. Your journey is amazing. I love everything you said. And to end this, here's my last question for you. Mm-hmm. What is one word to describe your journey as a host of the Lagim podcast?
Wow. What is one word? Oh, that is a good question. You got me there. I think it would be acceptance. And I'd like to explain acceptance. For the longest time, I've been sort of in denial of things that I was passionate about, things that I really wanted to do with my life, thinking that I had to focus on my law career because that was expected of me. Growing up Filipino, there are a lot of expectations that are projected on you. And being a lawyer was something that I was told should be like my whole life, my whole identity, my whole personality. And when I realized that I truly hated it, that I didn't like the practice of law, I had to gradually accept that this was not my path, that this was not my destiny, that I was made for something else, that I am a storyteller, that even if I don't end up doing podcasts full time, that it is something that I should be doing on the side with whatever full-time job that I have. And it was a process of acceptance, because I was just so in denial, because I said, you know what, because both of my parents have passed on already, but I still held on to that very weird notion that if I don't stay in this legal profession for the next 50, 60 years until I retire, I'd be bringing my family dishonor. I'd be a failed daughter, you know? And I don't know, like I've just internalized that so much, because my mom really wanted me to be a lawyer, and my dad had high expectations of me, you know, when I was in law school. And I just had to free myself from these things. And I just had to accept, and that's why I said acceptance is the word. I had to accept that my parents would be happy to see that I'm happy now, because I'm doing this, I'm podcasting, and it makes me happy. And I have a job that's less stressful, that allows me time for my hobby, and still make sure that I have food on the table, I can pay rent for my apartment. I think they would still be proud of me, even though I'm not a lawyer anymore. And I accepted that I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. It was a 2-year process to just divorce myself from you know, me and the lawyer version of me, and eventually it became easier and easier in those 2 years, until I finally accepted that, you know what, it's okay, you've achieved what you wanted to achieve, You said you were going to go to law school. You said you wanted to finish law school. You said you wanted to practice law. You've done all of those things. And now you're unhappy. Now you got to move on to the next phase of your life, the next chapter, you know, because life is never linear, you know, and you just have to accept the things that come your way. And sometimes those are things that you might not want for yourself necessarily, but sometimes those are the things that are good for you. And so, yeah, acceptance and doing this project and quitting my law job, doing a less stressful job as my day job, has been the most freeing thing. And mental health wise, the most amazing and healing bit for the past 2 years.
Wow, that's very inspiring. And I'm happy that you're happy right now. And it makes you free when you do these things. And wow, I just learned so much from you, your journey. Yeah, again, it was amazing. Thank you so much for being with me today. But before I super duper end this now, tell me more about your podcast. Where can they listen? Go ahead.
Yes. So everybody on my podcast is called La Game, a Filipino true crime podcast. It is available on all major podcasting platforms, especially on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. I release episodes every other Friday, and we are on our second season now. I'm releasing, I think, episode 3 or 4. Oh, I lost count. Next Friday. But to those who have not heard any of my episodes yet, you've got one whole season plus a few more bonus episodes to listen to binge to right now. And I am also very active on Instagram. You can reach out and suggest cases on Instagram. So my handle is @LaGamePodcast. And if you click on the link in my Instagram bio, you'll see all of the other places where La Game is social media wise. And also I've got a Google Doc that you could type your case suggestions into. And yeah, I think there are 3 or 4 cases there already, which is really exciting. And yeah, so I invite everybody to listen to it, to get in touch, to join my Facebook group and also discussion group on Facebook. And yeah, let's talk about true crime.
Wow, thank you so much again. Thank you. And I hope you have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Filipina Cheney podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram @TheFilipinaCheney, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Spotify to get updated whenever we post a new episode. If you have any questions and or suggestions, you may contact me through my email, thefilipinacheney@gmail.com, or through our social media platforms. That will be it for today, and have a wonderful journey ahead.